Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Lawrence Holmes, noon to 2 on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, a radio.com sports station.
Yes, this is the Lawrence Holmes Show, but I am Hub Arker sitting in for Lawrence today. He'll be back in a couple days. Tomorrow, actually, it'll be Anthony Heron and Olin Krutz in this spot. You don't want to miss that. I know I'm not going to. The one constant, however, is Tony Gill, our executive producer behind the glass, doing an outstanding job as always. The boss man, Shane Reardon's been sitting in as well. Here comes Rick Camp. I think he was podcasting, I heard. Saw Sean Anderson working in there as well. Guys, we've got the best production crew anywhere in radio. They're the guys who make all this go. This hour on The Score is brought to you by Vasectomy Clinics of Chicago. And we are going to switch topics before we go, though. We are lit up here with Colin Kaepernick stuff. I will get back to some of that maybe after we talk some baseball with Gonzo. But just to be clear, I was asked a question. I didn't say it was my idea to go sign Colin Kaepernick, if that was the answer to all that ails the Chicago Bears. Answered the question. Certainly feel strongly about the answer I gave. But guys, before we waste another, I don't know what your data rates are costing you. Again, I was just responding to a question about, you know, would Colin Kaepernick be a good idea? Now, I'm really going to tick you guys off, though, because I am going to bring in the only man in Chicago who was celebrating wildly at 3:15 last Sunday afternoon. Literally, I think, the best baseball writer in Chicago at the Chicago Tribune. He's on the Cubs beat, Mark Gonzalez. But also a born and bred Oakland Raiders fan. And yet I still invited you on today, Gonzo. How you doing, bud?
Doing a lot better, I'll tell you that.
I got to ask quickly. Tony sent me the picture last night, and forgive me, is that you standing next to Al Davis in that picture?
Yeah.
I thought so. That's what I thought.
31 years ago at an East-West Shrine football practice.
Yeah, we both had hair. It was stunning. Actually, mine was about 40 years ago, but, you know, what are you going to do? I know, Mark, that we have a lot of fun with it. Grew up a Raiders fan, and I've told this story occasionally on the air. You and I have talked about it. Al Davis, I wouldn't say second father, but my dad passed away when I was pretty young. That's how I ended up taking over Pro Football Weekly when I had no idea what I was doing. And Al Davis was a good friend of my dad's, and it was he and Jim Finks who reached out to me and kind of took me under their wings in my 20s and taught me. A lot of people think I may not know much, but whatever I do know about football, I learned a lot of it from Al Davis. And so while I certainly was hoping to see your team get their butts kicked on Sunday, I get the affection for that organization and particularly for a guy who I think is in some respects quite misunderstood in the sporting world.
Yeah, he passed away 8 years and one day ago, and his presence still lingers throughout the organization. And there was a terrific story in Sports Illustrated just on how much he impacted the game.
Well, we're talking about an NFL Hall of Famer, and the only guy ever to be a Coach of the Year and Executive of the Year. Only Coach of the Year ever to end up owning a football team, although I would think Paul Brown must have won a Coach of the Year award somewhere. I don't know if they were doing it in those days. But, Mark, I asked you to come on for a topic equally close to my heart, and I know it's where your expertise lies. The Chicago Cubs have acknowledged at this point that they have interviewed Mark Loretta for their managerial job. My understanding is they are visiting with Joe Girardi today, that it'll be David Ross's turn tomorrow, and they either have or are going to speak to Will Venable. Before we get into those four, are you hearing anything about any additional candidates, or do you think that's the group from which the next Cubs manager is going to come?
No, they're still, you know, casting a wide net. You know, Joe Espada, the coach of the Astros, is in the picture. I think when there's a break of some sort in the playoffs, they'll reach out to him. But, you know, Theo's tendency has always been to be deliberate in this process, make sure you talk to every possible candidate. Keep in mind that dating back to 2013, they were hoping to talk to Torey Lovullo, but There was a rule that stated that Theo could take only so many former, so many Red Sox employees with him, and Torrey Lavalla was on the list of people he could not talk to because he was employed by the Red Sox and went on to get a manager's job with the Diamondbacks later. But Theo will be very thorough in this. I'm sure there's an urge to get something done, but he's going to make sure he's talked to every viable candidate before narrowing this down.
You know, Mark, I was terribly disappointed when the Cubs did not hire Joe Girardi when they hired Ricky Renteria, and nothing against Renteria. I just thought Girardi was such a perfect fit at the time. I'm a huge fan. He's a guy who's got rings as a player and as a manager with the Yankees. And yet I was led to believe by a lot of folks prior to Joe actually being, and he wasn't fired, he just wasn't retained, that Girardi probably wasn't even going to be a candidate. Now, obviously he is. He's interviewing today. Do you get a sense that he is an equal competitor here, or is it possible that the Cubs are doing something to mollify fans like me who think he should clearly be the guy?
I've heard it on both sides. I've done a lot of homework on him recently and come away more impressed talking to some people who have been around him, and they really speak highly of him. I thought it was terrific that David Haw and Mully had him on to kind of clarify a few things that I've heard very true in terms of his acceptance of numbers analytics and, you know, the nickname Binder Joe. That certainly fits him. You know, he uses all the information you get. Furthermore, I was told he's really good with interacting with the scouts, treating them as equals, absorbing all the information possible. The bottom line is going to be the team's comfort with him, with players, especially nowadays. It sounded like there was a disconnect at the end with the Yankees. He'll probably be asked about that. But all the other stuff I've heard from him, I've been pleasantly surprised at just how fondly people have spoken with him, not because I thought he was a bad guy, but certainly he's a very knowledgeable guy doing a terrific job on the telecast of the playoffs, but people have talked of really spoke highly of him in terms of his acceptance of information and dealing with the people who provide it.
So, Mark, and I'm not discounting Loretta or Venable or any of the other guys who may still come into the picture, but from one extreme to the other, now you've got David Ross, who has been reported by some, a lot actually, to be the favorite in the clubhouse, who has not a single ounce of managerial or coaching experience. It is really from one extreme to the other. What are you hearing about how you really make the case for David Ross making sense?
The game is changed quite a bit in that regard. I mean, look at Aaron Boone. He's going to the American League Championship Series. He didn't manage before, but he's been surrounded around great baseball people, you know, starting with his father and Mike Gillespie at USC and a few other big league managers he's been around. He's a sharp guy. He's seen a lot of baseball. You could point going back to Bob Brenly, who won a championship in his first year with the Diamondbacks, where Bob really did a good job of giving the vet. He knew to give the veterans a lot of rope and kind of manage things the best he could. Certainly there were some speed bumps along the road. I understand your concern about David not managing a game because the game is faster. You know, however, David's, you know, been behind the plate, managed a lot of people in terms of pitchers, you know, situation when to slow them down, when to get on their case. I'm not saying he's the favorite. I think, though, in these days, there's something to be said for a guy who's been through the wars behind the plate, been through his share of World Series games, and also can get on a teammate if need be, if the drill's not run properly.
Is it fair to argue or take the position that I do agree with Theo on this? I absolutely believe the window is still open. The problem is that a few years ago, you know, or the last few years, I guess I want to say, we felt that window might be open for 3, 4, 5 years. There is no question, at least at this point, that the window at best is open 2 years with all these guys. 2021, you got a bunch of decisions to make after that about your star players. With the window open but such a small time frame, do you make the argument that the experience of Girardi might be a lot safer than taking a flyer on a Rossi?
You might look at the other side, what players you're going to be dealing with, and there's a comfort more with Ross than Joe, simply from the fact that players know Ross, maybe they don't know Joe. And let's face it, the players have a lot of say in what goes on over there. We've seen it the last 3 years, three hitting coaches, three pitching coaches fired. It's pretty evident that the players wield a lot of power in this organization. You can't fire 25 players, so it's a very delicate area, but this is what they've created over there. And I think the window maybe might be tighter than 2 years.
I was very impressed with Mark Loretta on these airwaves. I want to say it was last Saturday morning with Matt. I can't remember the specific interview now, but I remember, you know, listening to him, and I believe it was right after he had interviewed. I was a little surprised. He actually was fairly open. He didn't blame Joe in any way. He didn't point any fingers at Madden, but he talked specifically about a few things that he felt needed to be improved, which clearly were the responsibility of Madden. But overall, I just kind of liked what I heard. Do you get a sense that unless there's somebody else out there, that it's between Ross and Girardi, or do you think Loretta has a real shot?
I think Mark's a viable candidate. I always liked talking to him. The few times I did as a player, I always got keen insight from him, and I think that being in the front office for 9-10 years with the Padres helped, and then coming back on the field gave him a wide perspective of just what goes on during a game, and also, you know, the big picture when you're dealing with players with options, contractual situations, player evaluations. He's checked off a lot of boxes there, so I would be surprised too if he didn't interview for the Padres job, because I thought he'd be well suited for that organization, just based on his knowledge of the young prospects coming up, that market, what's on the field right now. But as far as here's concerned, yeah, I think he's a viable candidate.
Mark, Joe Madden was the most successful manager in baseball over the last 5 years, at least wins, losses, titles. I don't think anybody else has won more than two titles in the last 5 years. And yet the Cubs have chosen to move on. They're obviously looking for something different, or at least some changes. Can you explain to the audience your understanding of, you know, kind of maybe with some specifics as to what those changes would be?
Somebody who's going to be, I think, more assertive one-on-one with the players, even if it means some tough love. That's a delicate area, because these guys have really been given carte blanche here. In some cases, it's worked well, especially with guys like Javi Baez, but in others, you know, Joe's big on letting the players manage themselves, and, you know, Joe coaches the coaches. But I think they wanted to see more from him, and I think that successor, that they'll look to see him be more hands-on in terms of the coaching up of the kids. And Theo made an interesting comment in his end-of-the-season presser, and I thought it kind of speak to what's going on in baseball now, that the development continues at the big league level. Before, it used to be that when you called somebody up from the minors, that meant that the guy was a finished product. But as we saw in the last month with all the careless base running mistakes and all that, there's a need for more coaching at the big league level. And I think they'll look to the next manager to be more hands-on in that regard.
You know, Mark, as members of the media, I think that we have been forced to, we have favorite players too, but we've been forced to understand that you got to give something to get something. And if you're going to improve the team, you have to make changes. A lot of people looking at the Cubs, whether you call it the core four, five, you know, whatever you want. To me, the three guys that basically change this from improving the team to a reboot would be if they were to deal Bryant, Baez, or Rizzo. I don't think there's any chance they're dealing Rizzo. But, you know, what changes can they really make this offseason to be a contender next year? Obviously, the focus is going to be on starting pitching in the bullpen and then maybe a different style at the plate. Do you think one of the big guys goes, or how do you think they're going to approach this?
I think that's my sense. I'm not sure they can afford both guys, meaning Bryant or Baez, unless they move some other big-ticket guys, and that's going to be tough, because certainly those guys aren't going to carry the same value as they do. In the case of Anthony, I'm with you. You know, he's pretty valuable to this team. And also, you know, first baseman, sometimes there's just not that market for guys. I mean, the White Sox saw it with Abreu before There was a decision made that he was staying with the team. No matter how good a guy is, usually the teams feel that they can put somebody there and he can give you 25 homers and knock in 80 runs. But in the case of the other two, I think they can help address a lot of areas. You know, I like both guys. I hope they stay. But, you know, the big picture is they have some holes to fill. They don't have many true, you know, major league ready young starters. You know, Azale still got some work to do. Bullpen, there were some nice surprises there, but they still need a guy who's dependable at the back end, a guy that should have been like Carl Edwards Jr., a guy that just stagnated the last couple years. They need to address that spot. And then a contact hitter, you know, looking at their contact rate and some of these guys that, you know, range from the high 60s to low 70s, that's not good. And they got to address that.
Mark, has Chris Bryant already been devalued a little bit with some of the nagging injuries and the fact that that he's unable to match the MVP year numbers?
I still think there's plenty in the tank there. I really do, because he plays hard. Maybe you tell him, you know, quit sliding head first, and that way you won't mess up your shoulder. But he has played hurt. I can testify to that, because I've seen him after games walk around with a big, you know, ice pack on his knee, wrapped like a mummy. I'm still the belief he's got something there in the tank, but other teams may not see it that way. But, you know, haven't seen him up close. I don't think he's peaked yet. I still think there's plenty in the tank.
I completely agree with that. But I guess what I'm getting at is if you have to deal one, you're probably going to get a lot more for Baez than Bryant, aren't you?
Yeah, you are. I think you absolutely are. I mean, the way he plays shortstop and the way he has stayed relatively injury-free until this season speaks to that. But keep in mind, he did have a cold August. So I'm not saying that's going to, you know, haunt him or haunt the team in trade talks. But, you know, something to look at. He's made some strides, you know, at the plate, hitting all fields now. You know, contact rate, you just live with it.
Well, and then the last piece, and I know I got to let you go, but it's a lot harder to replace a shortstop than it is a third baseman, much like what we were saying about Rizzo. You can't, I wouldn't think at this point, you can't or may not even would want to commit to Addison Russell. And as interesting as Nico Hoerner was, he sure looked a lot better to me at second base than he did at shortstop.
Yeah, there's just the comfort with the pitchers when Javi's playing shortstop. It's very huge. I mean, pitchers will give you the wink or tell you or nod. That's that, how much comfortable they feel with Javi out there, knowing they don't have to make the perfect pitch, but just make sure the ball gets on the ground. There's a good chance he's going to field it cleanly and get the out.
All right, Mark, I got to let you go, but before I do, you got to answer a football question for me. I am still relatively comfortable. The Bears are the better team than the Raiders over the course of the season. There's still some things to work on in Oakland, but hey, they're 3-2. Have they turned the corner?
I'd like to think so. I mean, they're going to lose their share of games, but I was just looking at the roster, and you know, they won that game without guys like Farrell and Abram, who I really think has a chance to be an All-Pro safety. But I think there's a foundation there. Guys are playing hard for the coach. I'm not the biggest fan of the coach, but he's done a terrific job. I just like the fact that Tom Shearer, one of the old SCORE employees, popped off this winter about how lopsided that trade was and all that, and just see what happened on the field made my day, made my week too.
All right, Mark, I'm happy for you. Hey, you know, everybody's got to have their day, and you've earned yours being a Raider fan for a while, so good for you. Thank you so much for joining us today. That is Mark Gonzalez, the Chicago Cubs beat reporter for the Chicago Tribune, a regular guest whenever I'm on here at the SCORE, because I love talking both baseball and football with Gonzo. We've got to take a break here. I am behind schedule. When we get back, I got a half hour to take your calls. 312-644-6767. The subject is yours. I will answer it as best I can. Again, 312-644-6767, or give us a text at 67011. We're back in just a moment at Chicago's number one rated radio station, all sports station, I should say, 670 The Score. Welcome back, everybody. Hub Arker sitting in for Lawrence Holmes today. I know that Lawrence will be back in a couple days tomorrow in this shift. You're going to have Anthony Heron and Nolan Cruz. You don't want to miss that from noon to 2. Next up, we're going to have, I call them the Dans, Danny Parkins and Dan McNeil. They will be in shortly for some transition. The bottom of this hour is brought to you by Northwestern Football. Join Northwestern Football at Ryan Field this fall when the Wildcats, led by Big Ten Coach of the Year Pat Fitzgerald, host Ohio State, Purdue, and Minnesota in Big Ten play. Single-game tickets to see Chicago's Big Ten team are on sale now at nusports.com. I want to thank a texter here. But either I didn't explain the question properly or you didn't hear it properly. He's telling me Paul Brown, formerly of the Cleveland Browns, Cincinnati Bengals, AP NFL Coach of the Year in 1970, three times UPI NFL Coach of the Year, 57, 69, 70. I know all that. What we were talking about was Al Davis, the only man to be a AFL Coach of the Year and an NFL Executive of the Year. And what I was saying is I'm surprised if Paul Brown wasn't the Executive of the Year at some point for some of those Browns teams that he built, but I don't know if they were giving the award at that time. Let's get one more call in quickly before I have to get to break again. I think it's Denny. Denny is in Homer Glen. Denny, how you doing?
Good. Hey, I just want to mention, with most NFL coaches, especially an offensive coordinator, you would think that you use plays that work, and ones that don't work, you eventually just drift away from them. So all last year, I watched Tariq Cohen run into a wall every time he goes off tackle, and then for the first five games of this year, I think we took all of last year, and then this year, his average run going off tackle is 0 yards. Why, especially when we need some short yardage or whatever, you could have somebody at least who could move a pile or do whatever. But that play, I'm just a spectator, but just watching that play, it never, ever, ever works. Why do they keep doing it?
Well, Danny, I think the answer, number one, is that you've never seen them do that with him in short yardage. They know he's not the right guy for that. But you are correct. They do run him between the tackles. And all you got to do is go back to his first 2 years in the league when he averaged over 4 yards a pop. The reason is because if he gets through that first seam, he can be gone for 30, 40, or 50. Whereas other guys, you saw Josh Jacobs had big holes all day on Sunday, but I don't think he had more than a couple runs that were for more than 8-9 yards. You get Tariq Cohen and pop him into a gap at that second level, he can be gone all the way. So that's why they do it. Are they doing it too much? Well, they can't be doing it too much because he's only averaging 3 carries a game, you know? So I don't think it's that particular play call that is the problem so much as the run game as a whole is just not functioning properly. Guys, we got to take another very quick break here, but I am going to get to Frank and Dick, who are waiting on the lines. We are back in just a moment right here at The Score. Welcome back to the program, everybody. Hub Arkishin for Lawrence Holmes today. Got a few more minutes before we welcome in Danny Parkins, and Nick Shepkowski will be in for Dan McNeil today. We'll have some transition with you for you in just a moment. This segment on The Score is brought to you by Valparaiso University. We all want to be part of something bigger. At Valparaiso University, you could be part of something bigger without losing yourself in the crowd, and you'll discover that making the world a better place isn't wishful thinking. Visit valpo.edu to request information, apply, or schedule a visit. Let's get right back to the phones while we have a minute or two left. Frank is in Lakeview. Frank, how you doing?
I'm good. I just was able to turn the radio on. I was really happy to hear your voice.
Thank you.
And I don't have to wait till Friday to ask my question. In the 2018 draft, I was really hoping that Quentin Nelson would be the guy that the Bears got. And he's having a heck of a year in Indianapolis. And I would just like you to talk about that a little bit. Just talk about how much of an impact he's had in Indianapolis and their success there and how he projects to be in the future.
Frank, I will tell you is maybe controversially, but certainly as bluntly as I can, I'm watching that game Sunday night, and as the game came to an end, I decided I am one of the 50 voters at AP for the annual, all-pro awards and everything else that comes with it. These are the ones that are accepted by everybody. And if the season ended tomorrow, I would vote for Quentin Nelson as my MVP. I think he is that good. He has that big an impact on that offense. I've never seen a player dominate from the offensive guard position like that since Larry Allen, and they're the only two that I've ever seen, you know, have that kind of dominance on the offensive line. Now, Allen eventually ended up moving out to tackle, but Nelson is the best pure guard I have ever seen, or at least seen, I should say, in the last couple decades since Larry Allen. Now, I'm pretty sure he went at 6. The Bears took Roquan Smith at 8. I know for a fact that had Nelson still been there, the Bears would have had a very difficult decision between him and Smith. At Pro Football Weekly, profootballweekly.com, I ranked Quentin Nelson the number one prospect in that draft. And so there is nothing surprising about this, but his sheer dominance is just really, really impressive. We'll get one more in before we move on to our transition. Let's get Dick in from Oak Creek, Wisconsin. Dick, how you doing?
I'm doing well. Listen, I got a rules question for you, Hub. Okay, with 2 minutes to go in the game and the defensive team is out of timeouts and one of their players gets hurt, what's the rule on that?
I don't want to give you the wrong answer, and I'm not totally sure. Injury timeouts, if you have timeouts remaining, I know you are docked one. If you don't have any, a clock runoff benefits the defense, so it wouldn't make any sense. On offense, you get a 10-second runoff on the clock. But I don't have a good answer for you, Dick. I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I'll be back on Friday visiting with Dan Bernstein and Connor McKnight, and I promise you I will have an answer for that. We're on at 10 o'clock. So if you don't get an answer sooner, because there's people smarter than me out there, you know, I will get you that answer when we get back on Friday morning. It's a great question. Thank you very much, and we're going to dig it out for you. I am going to take a very quick break here because I get to visit with Shep and Danny in just a moment here at The Score.
Bye-bye.
Tripping. I'm out of here anyway. Peace out.
It gets you every time.
It does, Tony, because nobody is ever going to mistake Lawrence Holmes for Hub Arkus or Hub Arkus for Lawrence Holmes. And, you know, there are certain things that we do that are kind of uniquely identifiable, or I don't want to say personal. And I love it when Lawrence does it. But then when I'm here, I'm thinking, is that me? Nah, whatever. But we are just about out of time. I get to spend a few minutes with the guys who are in for their afternoon. We've got, of course, Danny Parkins and Nick Shepkoski in for Mac today. Shep, good to see you as always. And guys, it's been fun so far. You know, obviously there's plenty of Bears talk, but I really enjoyed. I spent about 20 minutes with Gonzo, Mark Gonzalez, talking about this Cubs managerial thing, and I'm fascinated by it because everything that I had heard was that Joe Girardi just wasn't a candidate. Well, then he not only became a candidate, but he's interviewing today, and according to Gonzo, he says it's not just a token interview. I don't think he's the favorite by any means. He's certainly my favorite. I don't know how you guys feel about it. But I'm excited to see what happens here because I believe the window is still open, and I think this is probably the biggest decision that Theo will make as the GM or whatever his title is of the Cubs.
See, that's where I disagree with you because how much do you think a manager matters in 2019?
Danny, I'm not saying I'm not talking about the impact the guy's going to have. I'm talking about this will probably finalize Theo's legacy. I mean, because if he doesn't bring in somebody who can be successful and do well again, people are not going to remember Theo as the savior of the Chicago Cubs, which he has been up until now.
I'm more on the side with Hub on this one in that I look at the Girardi thing, and I kind of talked to Danny about this before the show. I think it's a token interview. I don't think Joe Girardi's a candidate for this whatsoever. He might be interviewing, and I heard the Gonzo piece with you, and I was surprised to hear Gonzo reporting that from his understandings of it. Mm-hmm. I would be flat-out stunned if Joe Girardi got this job. And he's a guy that I'm rooting for to get it. Why? Because, yes, obviously the old former Cubs ties and that. But he's a guy that's been through the rigors. He's been through this with the New York Yankees. He's been through this before. He's not simply going to be a yes man. And having someone in there that's not the easiest to get along with, can it be frustrating at times? Certainly. It doesn't mean it's bad for business, though.
I just think that what Theo is going to ultimately do here, I don't know who it will be, whether it's the guy in Houston or Mark Loretta or David Ross. I think he's going to hire someone who's closer to 40 than 60, closer to 1 million than 5 million, and have it be more of an extension than the front office than an individual thinker who will push back on him. And that's not Joe Girardi.
Yeah, I mean, and the way I come at this, I don't know how important the manager is in Major League Baseball these days.
I don't think it's very important.
I don't know. I'm not disagreeing with you. I do know, I mean, football, the head coach is hugely important.
Of course.
Definitely.
Big, big difference. And I don't know if it has the same impact in baseball. And I don't pretend to know which one is the better choice, But based on their resumes, it seems to me that Girardi is the better choice. That said, all I'm getting at here is whoever he picks better be the right guy, or his legacy is going to be tarnished forever with the Cubs. And my instinct tells me that Girardi is the better choice, but I don't really know.
Yeah, Girardi definitely has the best resume. I'm just not sure how much that matters right now, because I think that they think that a lot of people can do the job if put in the right position.
That's the fascinating part about it, is because Danny, I've heard that,
yeah,
and that I don't agree with. Not just anybody. Give me the job then, because well, God knows nobody would love it more than I would. You know?
Yeah,
that's previous to the Madden hiring. When Ricky Renteria was hired, it was, oh my God, Brad Ausmus is available. People knew who Brad Ausmus was because he caught for the Astros for 20 years or so. Oh my God, Brad Ausmus is available. He's going to be an awesome manager. You got to get Brad Ausmus. And it's why? Well, he was that exact guy. 40-year-old veteran player, was pretty much a yes man to whatever management said, ended up going to Detroit, goes to LA now, works with the Angels, and Brad Ausmus was pretty much a rumor of a manager. Didn't ever accomplish a whole heck of a lot of anything. And it's just that you have these guys that, all right, yep, exciting because you're familiar with the name and it's a younger guy and can relate to the players. I still look at it. I think that there were a bunch of shortcomings with this team this year. Obviously, there were attitude type of deals going on, focus being lacked. It was brought up way too often to not be true. You can't tell me that the right manager in there wouldn't have made a difference.
And, you know, guys, people keep pointing to Aaron Boone, and to me, that's a false equivalency because I know he had no experience. But you talk about the ultimate baseball lifer. I mean, his dad, his brother. I mean, you know, yes, he has had experience, even if he wasn't a manager. I just don't think that's a true comparison to giving David Ross the job.
I mean, David Ross was in baseball for a long time. He's been on the media side. He had the apprentice in the front office that the Cubs have done as the special advisor. He did some scouting for them. I just don't think that the barrier of entry to that job is that high anymore. I'm not saying that you could do it. I'm not saying that I could do it. But I think that I will be floored if they hire someone who's bad at it. You know what I mean? And I also would be interested in how you think that they could really ruin their reputation in this town.
I don't think they're
going to. Or even hurt their reputation.
I don't think they're going to ruin their reputation. I think that if they get this wrong, because what's Theo's got 3 years left after this now?
2021. No, okay. So two years.
2 years.
2 years.
I mean, if they get this wrong, I don't think Theo will get fired, but Theo may choose to move on. And as much as we are always going to enjoy our memories of 2016, they are going to be the 85 Bears.
Yes.
And I don't think Theo wants to be the guy, you know, who turned the 85 Bears into a team that couldn't win again.
That has been my fear through this entire thing, is that you set things up in 2016. It looked like this was going to be the model franchise for all of Major League Baseball. Oh my God, look what the Cubs have. This young core, more money coming in they're going to spend on pitching, more money coming in that they're going to be able to throw at free agents. They're going to win 100 games for the next decade. They're going to be an unstoppable force, especially in a division where other teams simply can't spend the money that the Cubs have. And instead, you saw 2017 sleepwalk through the first half. They end up winning the division. They stumbled down the stretch last year, end up losing the division on the last day of the year. They go to, 84 wins is what they wound up with this year, out of the playoffs, sitting at home for that. And all of a sudden, the Dodgers have flown by. The Astros have flown by. You're looking at the Yankees. They've flown by. The Rays don't have a World Series that they've gotten to, but you look at that and it's, well, that's it. That's an organization that just gets it, and they're there every stinking year. No excuses accepted. And the Cubs have kind of just sat there, all right. Yeah, 2016 was a lot of fun, and yeah, remember 2016? That was great, and that was dandy, but future doesn't feel as good as it did a short time ago.
Yeah, the other thing I wonder about, you guys maybe have either looked into this more or know more about it than I do, but so much of what we've heard last year and this year is that the problems, short of the pitching, which is just bad decisions, I think, but as far as the offense, was, you know, too many strikeouts, not grinding, not working counts, not making contact. Those are the basic tenets of what Joe Maddon brought here 5 years ago. So what happened in the last 2 years with the changes that the front office wants? Did they get away? Are they the ones who said, no, we want more home runs and strikeouts? Because now we're hearing that's what they have to do more of. That was Maddon's expertise when he got here. Where did that disappear? Where did that go south?
Well, I think that that's complicated, right? Because they've had three hitting coaches in 3 years, and they had, you know, Theo with this whole launch angle is not a fad thing. Like he wants them to hit for power, but some of their walk numbers went away. Like, so like mm-hmm. they went from having all the walks, all the strikeouts and all the power to having all the strikeouts, some of the power, and not as much walks. Mm-hmm. Like the good side of it decreased because some of the players didn't take a step forward. So I don't expect there to be coaching changes this year. Like I expect you've
cleaned out both sides of it that's, 2 years in a row.
That's exactly my point. Weren't the last two hitting coaches Theo's guys, not Joe's guy?
Well, these and last so, ones are for sure. Yeah, I mean, you know. Chili Davis was more on the Joe. I think Joe got one last stand, and then these guys this past year are Theo guys. And I assume that they will stay with the Cubs because I think that they finally have come to the conclusion that it's bigger than the coaching staff. And that's why I also think it's bigger than the manager. I think it's they spent money on players that weren't good, and then they got hurt, or at least not good enough to perform up to their contract. So I think Theo's going to make five moves this offseason bigger than the manager. The manager's just the one that we're going to talk about, and it's going to be very front-facing and all of that. But he's talking about hiring an organizational director of hitting and a director of pitching and restructuring the front office, and then he's probably going to spend north of $50 million in free agency this year. I hope that those moves have more of an impact than the manager does. And I would also just like to point out, it's fairly remarkable, and Nick and I didn't live through it, but you did. It's fairly remarkable that we're at a point where the Cubs as the 85 Bears is an insult to both the Cubs and the 85 Bears. That is a fairly remarkable thing.
It is, but it's also reality. I mean, and I'll tell you the guys who it hurts the most. These are good friends of mine, the Dan Hamptons and Otis Wilsons of the world, who you know, they still love 85, but it's almost like at times they can't enjoy it because they feel because of the organization, happened. They didn't get the chance to do it again. And so when we look back on today's heroes and we hear what Rizzo and Bryant and Baez are going to be saying 10, 15 years from now, it would be a shame if the organization put them in a position where they didn't get to do it again either. Now, I don't think that's where we're at because I think there was enough. I mean, this year I blame the organization for. Last year, I think we constantly underrate those 42 games in 43 days. But even that said, the players didn't get to the end. They didn't get to the finish line. That's on them, not the organization. But then I think the attempts to fix it, and depending on what they do next, that's very much on the organization.
You're listening to WSCR and HD Chicago, WBMX HD2 Chicago, Sports Radio 670 The Score, a radio.com sports station. We will discuss that at points throughout the day. Alex DeBrinket at 2:45, Rich Campbell at 4 o'clock. And, you know, it's Bears bye week, Cubs, so nonsense is going to ensue.
Oh, I promise that. Just look at the text last hour or so.
Oh, well, you're starting a political show. Rush Harkish over here is taking over middays in this town.
Don't get me
look
fired.
Out.
I did not make a single political comment because if I had, I'm sure the phone lines would have blown up. Just do me one favor. I'm going to get out of your hair. Ask Alex if he's giving loans. I'm just curious.
Right?
Okay. Man. Yeah, we'll be sure to do that. Nice new contract for the cat. Hub, have a good day.
Take care, guys.
See ya.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.